You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to What's Your Backup Plan? I'm Olivia.
And I'm Fiona.
Fiona, how you doing this week?
You know, I'm doing a lot better than last week. Thank you for asking. I think last week was pretty hard, but this week I'm so inspired by all the people around me who are doing amazing things to help those in need and creating amazing art. It's just been a week of feeling a little more light. How about you, Olivia?
Same. Very much so, same. The last week, I think, was like rather than hump day, hump week.
Oh my gosh, it was a week of Wednesdays.
It was a week of Wednesdays. That was the most Wednesday week ever.
Yeah.
And I, you know, just decided to try to find the joy and the light, even through a dark time, and reignited the fire in me to do better for myself and for others. So, yeah. Speaking of doing better for others,
that's something we've been chatting about, how what we can do on top of the podcast to help those around us.
Yeah. So we decided that every week we are going to pick one charity to donate to. And this week we are going to donate to Feeding America. Fiona, tell us a little bit about Feeding America.
Well, thanks for asking. Feeding America is the largest domestic hunger relief organization in the country. Every year, they help feed 1 in 7 Americans. That's over 4.3 billion meals annually. So they have a huge impact. And we know that quite a few people are out of work. There are places where there are food shortages. So this week, we're going to donate to Feeding America. And if you would like to join us, the link will be in our show notes. We'd love it if you have the means to help. And if you don't, that is A-OK. Just share the message with the people around you who might be able to.
And continue to stay inside.
Stay inside.
Today's guest is Meg Zervolis. Meg is a music director, a pianist, and arranger who's worked on and off Broadway at Paper Mill Playhouse and at our alma mater, Montclair State.
A couple of Meg's credits include Mean Girls, The Prom, Great Comet, and she's currently working on West Side Story. We hope you enjoy today's episode, Inside.
Inside.
Well, today's guest is Ms. Meg Zervolis. Hi, Meg. So happy to have you on here. So, Meg, for our listeners, our hundreds of thousands of listeners.
Hundreds of thousands.
Can you tell us a little bit about your upbringing and how you started playing piano for us?
Sure. My dad is a musician. My parents actually met in a drum corps band together. We always had a piano in the house. And the story goes that I would sit down at the piano at a really early age and like, play along with the radio, et cetera, et cetera. Then they put me in lessons. And then ever since then, I think I was about 3 or 4 at that point, just have been playing forever.
And were you always interested in musical theater?
Yeah. Initially, you know, for the first maybe 5 to 10 years of lessons, it was all about classical music and playing concertos and playing scales and all of that. But then at a pretty young age, I started to go see Broadway shows and always had an interest in doing like the plays at school and stuff. So that's always been a long time love for sure.
So you studied at Carnegie Mellon for, did you study piano?
I studied piano performance and then also got an education degree there and did a couple of kind of independent studies in conducting and theater conducting and classical conducting. So a little hodgepodge.
And so eventually then you started to work at Montclair State and also at Paper Mill Playhouse's Summer Conservatory. So how did you get into that, find that, you know, the whole thing?
Well, Paper Mill came first. I've been working there since high school. There was this woman who was the supervisor of arts and music for our district in Bayonne, New Jersey. And she was really close friends with one of the education administrators at Paper Mill. And they were looking for an accompanist for something random. And she suggested me. And so ever since then, I've just been playing there and kind of climbing up the ladder at Paper Mill. Montclair came through Paper Mill, I think. I actually cannot remember at this point, but I think that Clay James and the rest of the department was looking for another music director to add to their staff. And then I went in for an interview, started initially as a piano teacher only in the music school, and then began music directing for Montclair State for roughly like 5 to 6 years I was at Montclair.
I think you were supposed to be the music director for Closer Than Ever my freshman year, right?
That sounds right. And then Something New York, I think, got in the way of that.
Something got in the way. Yeah. But I remember doing a callback for you in the basement studio of Life Hall and just being like scared out of my mind, so nervous, but you made me feel so comfortable and so confident. So all of Montclair loves Meg. We love
it. It's true. You're a dream.
Yes. So how did you sort of transition from education and music directing at schools and conservatories to subbing on Broadway? Was that what came next, subbing in pits?
Yeah, subbing in pits came much later, maybe 10 years later. So while I was working at Paper Mill in Montclair, during the daytime, I was still teaching in public schools and doing music therapy for music and autism. And that's something I hope to go back to at some point as well. But essentially what ended up happening is that my New York schedule became so busy that I was just unable to remain as committed a daytime public educator as I could. So then the following year, there was an opportunity for my first subbing gig at Matilda on Broadway, which is another connection that came through Paper Mill because I was working on Ever After at Paper Mill, which was this lovely new musical. And Mary Mitchell Campbell was the music supervisor for that. And she kind of collaborated with my administrators at Paper Mill in the spirit of just saying, you know, there are some New York opportunities, kind of want to push this for her. So she hooked me up with the people at Matilda. And then ever since then, I've just been subbing, playing, conducting in New York. And that just seemed like the right time to make a shift in that career.
Right. And you've done a lot of shows, like a lot of really wonderful, amazing shows. Mm-hmm. So what are some of, if you have a favorite, what are some of your favorite shows that you have played for?
The Prom, I would say, was definitely my favorite overall experience. Everything about it, from the people involved, the music, the score itself, the band, the message of the show, it was just the best. And I remain hopeful, but I think it's going to be really hard to beat that one.
Yeah.
So there's that one. My favorite one to play, like from a musician standpoint, was absolutely American in Paris, which of course the piano part there was on an acoustic piano, which we have at West Side Story actually, but it was just so beautiful. And it incorporated a lot of repertoire that I had learned in my youth, you know, Gershwin, Rhapsody in Blue, and just lots of other, like the Cuban overtures, a lot of the other pieces of music from my life ended up it being in that Broadway opportunity. I was a sub there, but I played often enough to kind of feel like that was a moment for sure.
Right. And when you sub, it's pretty frequent too.
Yeah.
In all shows.
Mm-hmm. How does that work when you're subbing in a show? Like, how much notice do you get?
It varies by show. So at Natasha Pierre and the Great Comet of 1812, I started first as a sub musician for the second keyboard chair, which was actually keyboard and accordion. For a book like that, you don't rehearse with the orchestra, but then I also became one of their assistant conductors. And because the conductors at that show were involved in the show, you know, we danced, we did all this other stuff. I did have a little bit of a put in. The afternoon before my debut was like Josh Groban came downstairs and said hello, and the sound department was there because we have a lot of Ableton at that show. So that's one example. Whereas conducting another show, I'm trying to think of what's another example. Like my sub conductors at prom, the first time they conducted the show was during the show. So that wow. that is fairly common because yeah. it's so incredibly expensive for a conductor to rehearse with the orchestra. It's super rare. At Hamilton, you'd get a full put in as a conductor, but it is just with something called the beats, which is a whole other complicated thing, but it varies from show to show is the short answer.
Wow. Yeah. So going back to the prom, was that your first Broadway musical that you were music director of?
Yes, it was. Mm-hmm.
And how was that experience? Because you'd been assistant music director on Mean Girls.
I was the associate at associate. Mean Girls. Yeah.
So how did you transition from playing in an orchestra, subbing, conducting to music directing?
Well, and I like to tell this to students and younger colleagues all the time. It's basically the same skill set, like the same skill set that I used to music direct, you know, a production that we did at Montclair is the same group of skills that I'm using to music direct and build a new musical on Broadway. The only difference, of course, is the sense of pressure and potentially, you know, the caliber of the musicians that you're working with, but, and of course the budget. Mm-hmm. But I just kind of, in that it's just like fight or flight and, you know, you just handle every situation that comes across your desk. Music directing is a lot more managerial and diplomacy related than being an associate, which is slightly more musically oriented. Oftentimes on Broadway, the associates will do some clerical stuff like payroll or rehearsal scheduling or building the tracks for when you're going to go on the Tonys or something like that. But in general, generally speaking, music director feels like a day job. And then also at night, you go and do the show.
You also music directed at Paper Mill, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
What was that like?
Well, that was great because that felt like home base. I did right. Mary Poppins there and maybe six or seven other main stage shows. And it was just nice to be there. It has more, you know, it's such a friendly vibe to be working with, you know, like the sound guy that I knew since I was growing up and Mark and Patrick, who are the artistic directors there, you know, who like have known me since I was a child. But same thing, it's the same skill set, you know, working with people like Elena Shadow was Mary Poppins. And so that was really exciting to music direct and shape that show too.
And have that full circle moment too, you know?
Yeah, it was exciting.
So going back to Ableton, you were talking about using, I know that that's sort of more new technology that's being used in musicals. How have you been able to integrate that into shows that you've been working on?
Well, it often comes from the orchestrator or the composer. So if they're feeling like they want an extra layer, you know, like a synthesized track or something that's like really cool, trance or house music drums or like a hip hop beat that is not as easily replicated or performed by a live musician, it'll go into an Ableton stem. And the stem is the word that you refer to for like one horizontal line of music that will keep on going. And on top of that, you can stack other horizontal layers or strips. For us as music directors, we rarely design it ourselves. It is designed by an Ableton designer or potentially by the composer or orchestrator if they have that language in their skill set. And it's pretty complicated because, you know, if you miss that cue, then you miss a lot of important things that may go with it. And these days, there are often other elements of the show that are triggered by your Ableton trigger, such as lights or the door closes. At Comet, I know we had this one Ableton cue that like had to do with doors opening or something like that, or lights going on. And I know it was always a big deal if that was ever missed or it malfunctioned. So
how right. do you think Ableton is shaping the sound of musical theater? Because Ableton is also used for, like, my brother's a DJ, so he uses Ableton all of the time. It reminds me of that route of Phantom and that, like, kind of synthy techno route. So how do you think that Ableton itself is changing the sound of theater right now?
Yeah, I think about this often, and it's something that gets discussed pretty often too, just because there are also kind of like rules that people are starting to discuss, and whether or not, you know, are we breaking any rules by having synthesized instruments on the tracks, or if we have a time code Ableton trigger that's doing lights and you know, I don't know, a door, like I mentioned, and video. But it's falling into the music department, but it is really shared by other departments too. It's this whole thing. But as for shaping the sound, I think that more so comes from the brain of the orchestrator. So it's the orchestrator and composer's brain that is shaping, you know, these new sounds that we are hearing. And then the technology is enabling us to add that into musical theater. And it's like so expansive. Whereas, you know, if you have a trombone, they're a wonderful instrument and they have a lot of wonderful things, even if you include extended techniques, but there's a limit. There's a broader spectrum of sounds that are available if you're using technology. That's just going to be how it is. So it kind of expands the palette, and it's really cool to have that involved in Broadway now.
Agreed.
Absolutely. Going back to, you were talking about the Tonys. You conducted for the prom at the Tonys. And I read somewhere that you conducted from a bathroom. Is that true?
Yeah, that's how it works. To my knowledge, it's kind of happened that way for a really long time. You are instructed at a certain, you know when a certain number is going on that you should get out of your seat if you're attending the Tonys and go through this kind of side hallway through the wings backstage, go up in an elevator. This guy or gal greets you, brings you up to the, I think it was the sixth floor. I can't remember now. And then you're just in this literal shower stall bathroom where there's a mixer and a giant video screen of obviously of the broadcast. And then you yourself are on a giant TV in Radio City downstairs so that your cast can see you. And, you know, you hear the clicks go and then you conduct for whichever of the cast needs you for that. And yeah, that's how it works.
Wow.
That is amazing. What was that like?
That was really exciting. That was a cool moment because the year before I had observed my boss, Mary Mitchell, who I mentioned before, go through the same thing at Mean Girls. And you know, she's had a really long and vast career and she's like, oh yeah, got to go up to the bathroom. But to have that experience for the first time last year was really cool. I was like, oh, I'm going to the bathroom.
This is it. This is the time.
Yeah.
The only time to be excited going to the bathroom.
Yeah, right. Exactly. No, it was really cool. It's kind of funny to be up there in like your gown in the shower stall with like all the social, I think there's a department that's also on that floor during the Tonys, like maybe the social media department or something like that. And just to see them like chilling on their computers and you're like conducting for your life. Right. It's pretty funny. And you know, not every conductor needs to do it. There are some more digitized shows that just, you know, the cast is so accustomed to kind of being on autopilot or in the same tempo. Where, you know, the pressure of that day may cause it not to be essential, but we felt since we had our two principals being live vocals that we wanted to have a conductor there. So
I think that's absolutely a very smart move.
Mm-hmm.
And now you mentioned that you're working on West Side Story. What is that experience like working on a classic and with all of those changes? Were there a lot of changes made to the music? And you worked with Sondheim, correct?
Yeah, I've worked with Sondheim on a couple of projects. Alex Gemignani, who's the music director at West Side Story currently, and I have worked for him for a couple of years. There was a new musical that he was writing called Bunuel for the Public Theater. We did the Merrily We Roll Along revival that recently was produced. That was at Roundabout. But it's so interesting working with him because he is you know, as sharp as ever and has such a wonderful perspective on his shows being kind of given these new fresh takes. So it's really nice to see. We also on West Side Story worked with the Bernstein Estate, which is kind of spearheaded or kind of curated by his son, Alex Bernstein, and their siblings. And they also have kind of music consultants on that team. And generally, we started the whole process for West Side Story thinking that we were going to actually have a lot of new twists on the orchestrations and a couple of new transitions that would have kind of more modern, progressive Ivo Van Hove style sounds to them. But by the time we went all the way from studio rehearsal to opening night, what you hear now at night at Dot Production is basically the original in terms of form. So it's so interesting. There were a couple of cues which were just so out there. And if you've seen the big TV commercial, kind of had that vibe, which is just like solo piano out of time. And we were going to have sound effects and stuff. But, you know, things shift as we start to see the elements of the musical come together. And it was decided ultimately that the juxtaposition of the original sound and orchestral kind of style of the music wanted to be this kind of like anachrone to the visual aspects that we're seeing. So
you were also working on The Visitor at the Public before the shutdown. What was that experience like?
That experience was pretty different because that's a new musical from the ground up. It's been in development for a couple of years. It's lovely. It has onstage musicians. So that's always a really big challenge, even if it's, you know, Yo-Yo Ma. It's just the coordinating of those elements that tend to complicate the process. And it's been just a really wonderful journey. It's my second time working for Tom Kitt on his music. And that is always such a joy and pleasure. And the director is Dan Sullivan, who is, you know, has been around forever and is just a total specialist. And so it's been an honor to work on that piece. And we are so excited to figure out when we will be able to show it to everyone. We actually, the shutdown happened the night before our Zitz probe. So it was such an interesting kind of like gut punch moment for all of us, but we'll get there. So.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Yeah, it's true. So now that Broadway has shut down, how has this affected you and other musicians? Because I know just mentioning that, it is a sucker punch. It really is not pleasant.
Yeah, I think it's different for everyone. I know that there have been a lot of asks to participate in, you know, like virtual projects and virtual, I'm sure you've seen the music videos that are created to look like a Zoom call where everybody's singing along with their headphones. You know, there's been a lot of that. And that's so wonderful that everyone is continuing to create. So in that way, it's been a little busy because, of course, a piano track is something that all of those projects need. So luckily, there's a setup here that I have just to make all of that happen. I recently got engaged, so this is total.
Thank you.
So one positive is that, you know, we were expecting to have basically no time together to plan all of this, and now we have all the time in the world. So that's been a nice thing amongst all of this this darkness that's happening. You know, there it's different for us. We don't have kids. And, you know, I can't imagine what it's like for these heroes that have two kids and are also still working on, you know, like our general managers and anybody else who's kind of still working in the theater industry and also homeschooling their kids. It's just amazing. So, you know, we're counting our blessings over here and just trying to contribute in other ways that we can kind of help people during this time.
Absolutely.
You're a member of the American Federation of Musicians as well, right?
Yes.
Has there been any response or action taken by the union with COVID-19?
Yes. In fact, I serve on the theater committee as a delegate for Local 802. I represent West Side Story there, along with delegates from all of the other shows. And our union has been amazing in that our president, Adam Krauthammer, plus the people who are on their staff and administration there have been having kind of phone calls and Zoom calls with us to make sure that we're kind of kept abreast in the negotiations with the league and what to expect and to answer any healthcare questions. So that's been really great. I know it's super difficult for everyone to commiserate right now between the unions and then with the league and then with any other, you know, with the health companies, but everyone's doing their best. And generally I get a sense from AFM that they're really kind of trying to fight for our best, which has been really super appreciated.
Your music union is really spectacular. So let's talk a little bit about women in the music directing world. Because to be quite honest for all of our listeners, there has been a surge recently of female music directors. But before that, it was kind of just almost non-existent in a way. How have you seen that shift and how has it affected you and other women in opportunity making and being heard?
Yeah, I, by the time I had kind of transitioned into the Broadway profession, it was kind of, I feel like just at the beginning of this kind of hot moment for, you know, producing houses and for composers and directors searching and kind of being really dedicated to hiring music, female identifying music staff. And so before then, I kind of only had role models to look up to, like, again, Mary Mitchell Campbell, Kim Grigsby, just to think of a few where from afar, I've always seen, oh, well, maybe that is possible. You know, if she can do it, maybe there'll be a time when that's kind of a little bit less stigmatized. And so I think we're starting to see that now. And I often try to kind of pave this path where it's just not even a thing to mention or to point out because it should feel more of a normalized and equal thing. It is still extremely common to be conducting a Broadway show and to have somebody in the first few rows come up to you after and say, "Wow, a woman conductor. It's amazing to see. Congratulations," you know, which is such a wonderful and heartwarming comment. But of course, it comes with the side of like, yeah, of course, why not?
It should be the norm. Right. This shouldn't be like a, wow, finally. It's like a, oh, okay, awesome. They're doing their job.
Right. Yeah. You have the skill set. You have the experience. Of course, you're doing the job.
Yeah. But of course, we see this in industries all over the globe. You know, there's a rise in kind of having a bit more equity. There's really far way to go. There's something called maestro.org, which is this organization I'm a part of. And the woman who spearheaded it, Georgia Stitt, did this amazing data collection where you can find, if you go to that site, it just lists what the percentages are in Broadway pits of musicians and music directors, et cetera. And the statistics are staggering. So I'm hoping that, you know, I'm just kind of starting out in the Broadway world. I'm hoping that during my career as it goes, that we will enjoy a moment of kind of seeing those numbers climb and just a bit more evenness across the profession.
We just recently did an interview with a friend of ours who's a female photographer, and we talk about how women's perspectives and voices should be heard. And it's especially very important in music as well, because there is this whole other layer that women can give. So I am excited to see where that goes for sure.
If you had any advice for younger women who are hoping to play in an orchestra, conduct, music direct. Do you have anything you would give?
Yeah. I would say to try to observe, to try to ask if you can go and observe in a pit to kind of get that experience of seeing firsthand what it would be like. Another thing would to be familiarizing yourself with listening to and also playing all different genres of music, because these days, you know, new musicals, they kind of spread across the gamut, right? We might have an R&B or hip hop musical that's coming out, or we might have My Fair Lady, or the next couple of months, you might have to play one that's jazz oriented and play lead sheets. So it's really about building your skill set and being versatile, and kind of being ready for the call at any time, but kind of keeping your ears open. If you know that the New York scene is one that you want to get introduced to, kind of do those cold calls and ask, to politely reach out and ask if you can kind of go sit in the pit and see what might stem from there.
If you could envision yourself having a career 10 years from now, still music directing, what would you hope to be doing?
I've always been really interested in event music direction, like planning an event. So kind of just like a new musical, but thinking just more, I don't know, global or more in like TV film land, and what it takes to music direct one of those projects from beginning to end. So I'd love at some point to get into that world. As I mentioned before, I just remain committed to getting back to education in any way possible. So I'm hoping that it'll kind of be a full menu of theater music direction, maybe some commercial projects, and having some time or perhaps a chapter, which would include education again. I really try to continue to teach, even if it's a few lessons a week, I still do that. And then anytime I can do education outreach or anything that kind of benefits children, especially children with disabilities, I try to remain involved with that simultaneously as doing this music direction career. So right. I'm hoping that that's where I'll be.
I think you'll be there. That's for sure.
It's very cool to hear though, because I'd imagine that a lot of people picture a person who is working at the top of their field as continuing on that trajectory and working on more high profile projects. But to hear that you're really so committed to education and to going back to that is that's really amazing. I don't know that everyone has that outlook.
Yeah.
So that's really cool.
It's really wonderful to give back.
So right now, when we're all sort of stuck at home, I mean, I know you said you have your setup there, but what are you doing to stay feeling creative and connected and sort of on your game so that when you go back, you're ready?
Well, this has been nice to have time to practice, which is rare. You know, I could probably squeeze in a half hour, an hour every day while we're working full time, but this has made it so that I could definitely, you know, revisit old repertoire or do old technical exercises. So that has been awesome. And I'm trying to kind of branch out and play some other styles just to kind of keep my fingers going and to keep the muscular aspect of it, and also just the music reading aspect of things sharp. And then in addition to that, again, just participating in these new virtual projects. I've asked a few other pianists who might want to do like a virtual forehands video where I play half of it and they play the other half. Just trying to kind of participate in that way to keep things active. And I've been going to the maestro.org technical workshops, which have been amazing. And they're all kind of specialized. They're twice a week and they're taught by other members of our community. And the whole mission statement for that is just to keep our skills honed and sharp while we're kind of in this pause. So those have been a couple of ways.
So before we wrap this up, we always ask our guests what they are doing or what is keeping them inspired this week. So Meg, what is keeping you inspired this week?
I have to say my mom. My mom is just being such a positive light in all of this. The other day, my sister lives close to my mom. I live about a half hour from where my mom lives. And we drove over to her neighborhood and we kind of hung out with each other from our cars. And we were just like, yeah, well, we hope this will be over soon. This sucks. And she's like, you're fine. Your grandmother your grandmother was an army nurse during World War One, you know, just all of this stuff, just putting things in perspective. And every day she kind of checks in on Marco Polo. We taught her how to do Zoom. And so she's just been a really positive light during all of this. And it's nice to have somebody who's like lived a longer life to put a moment like this in perspective, just to kind of, you know, have something to lean on and just be reminded like, oh yeah, we're going to get through this. This is how human nature goes. So I would say that is definitely something inspiring that I've been thinking about this week so far.
Love it. And then how about you, Fiona?
I think what's been keeping me inspired is kind of what Meg talked about, all of these virtual cabarets and recordings people are doing of songs. The one that just came out from Beautiful, of all the different Beautiful cast singing together, I think that's just been inspiring to see people coming together. And I mean, people coming together who haven't seen each other in a long time. We just had a Zoom with our, maybe half of our Montclair State class of 2015.
Yeah. Oh, all the old friends.
Oh my gosh. I just think, you know, it's hard sometimes to connect through technology, but when you sort of embrace it as the only option, I haven't talked to a whole bunch of those people in 5 years. So that's been keeping me inspired and reminding me to reach out to those people a little more often. How about you, Olivia?
Well, on Saturday or Sunday, I forget, the Global Citizen concert was virtual. And for me, I was feeling really low all week with the news and with everything going on, and the weather was not helping. And it just reminded me that we really are all in this together, and that there is hope. And seeing the nurses with bruises on their faces with masks, and because of the masks, and just being so positive and sending such loving messages to us and taking time out of their day, saving people and seeing tragedy and just saying like, we're going to get through this. We're going to be okay. And just coming together as a planet just really inspired me and just reminded me that, yeah, there are going to be bad moments and human nature is human nature, but we're really going to be okay. And we're going to come out on the other side and all hug each other for 15 minutes straight. And I can't wait. And it also inspired me to donate and to really think about charity. And that, you know, yes, I'm suffering, but there are also people suffering. And for me, I always feel better when I help others. So community, again, that's always the answer, but it's just, you know, coming together.
Amen.
Definitely.
Thank you so much, Meg, for being our guest this week. It was so lovely to speak with you. And to our listeners, thank you for tuning into this episode. We are wishing you a week of optimism, fulfillment, and never sticking to your backup plan.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you like what we're doing, please rate, review, and subscribe, and tell your friends so that when they look us up, they won't have a hard time finding us.
Tune into next week's episode, where we will feature another charity that you can support during COVID-19, and you can hear an interview with Joe Roscoe from Built for the Stage. We hope to see you then.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.